Hey everyone, we are back after a 2-week hiatus. What's up everyone?
Hi guys. Wow, this feels like new. Like I almost forgot how this feels.
I know, right? Well, we had
it's been a while.
We were off 1 week because both weeks I guess were illnesses related, right?
Illnesses and then just not being able to get the time to put together a compilation show and other stuff, wedding stuff. Life stuff, guys.
Just life in general. But we're bringing you a brand new episode this week. And this week we're talking about none other than the doctor who is in the house, Doolittle.
Yes, we're sorry that this is how we're back with this.
That's an appropriate response because I think through the ages, Dr. Doolittle, we're going to find out if he holds up or not. And spoiler alert, guys, it's not good.
It's not, no.
It's not good.
It might have gotten worse.
Good doctor. So I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality.
So first off, we had done a holiday fundraiser that existed from my birthday of December 6th to Rolando's birthday of January 17th. It has ended. And we had a $500 goal and we got $580?
580 something.
Yeah, 87? So 80, something like that. So we exceeded our goal and we had more than like 10 people who donated from like something as simple as $5. One of our biggest ones was close to 100. And we just wanted to thank you guys on the air for that. We really appreciated your donations and
your generosity
and your care.
And we cannot wait to start using new gear for the next episode, most likely, if we figure out how to use it.
Yeah.
But the order has been placed. And thank you all for your generosity.
Yes. Be sure to tune into our next episode, especially when you hear Eddie Z talk, because he's going to sound more clear than you've ever heard him in your life.
Is that a good thing? I guess we'll find out then and there.
I can't wait, guys.
It's going to be really exciting.
Speaking of Eddie Z, you're also in the house.
I am here.
Can you talk to animals?
Just our dog, Bobby.
We do have conversations with our dog, Bobby. Yes.
Yes. I can talk to my cat. I mean, she understands like no and come here and her name. Mm-hmm. She doesn't always acknowledge that I'm talking to her, but she understands it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess let's get right into it.
Do you want to talk to animals after watching these three films?
There's only one film that makes me want to speak to animals.
Interesting.
So I guess we'll wait and see when we talk about that.
We shall wait and see. So we have a bunch of properties to go through, mainly three theatrical film versions, one from 1967 with Rex Harrison, one from 1998 with Eddie Murphy, and one from this year, 2020, with Robert Downey Jr. Not wanting to focus on this part of it, Dr. Doolittle is based on a literature character from a bunch of books, I think 12 books, from the story of Dr. Doolittle in 1920 all the way up to Dr. Doolittle and the Secret Lake. Not published until 1948, even though it was copyrighted in 1923. This was created by Hugh Lofting. I think he even created this character in his mind during World War I. You know, he was in the trenches and came up with this character. What an inspiration for a creative imagination.
It is 14 books altogether.
14 books.
I'm sorry. Well, 15 books.
A lot. One of them, I think, is The Voyage of Dr. Doolittle, which most of the films seem to be based on. At least two of them are. Mm. Or The Voyages of Dr. Doolittle, because he always seems to go on some sort of voyage. Never read it.
Some of them.
And unfortunately, I now have no desire to ever read it. So I apologize to fans of Hugh Lofting and the Dr. Doolittle literature series, but we're really not going to go over that today because we got three films.
I wonder if there are fans of the Dr. Doolittle book series.
Yeah, there's not. People aren't like crazy about Doolittle.
I mean, well, they're crazy enough to make three movies.
Which is interesting, too, because how at least the last one's done. I mean, you know, who is it made for? If for those of you who are unfamiliar with Dr. Doolittle, Dr. John Doolittle is a physician. He used to treat human patients, but now he has shunned them in favor of animals with whom he can actually speak to in their own language. And he learned from his parrot, Polynesia, who is a recurring character in also all the other films. There's also recurring characters of a little boy named Tommy and Matthew Mugg. And so, yeah, these are like kind of the characters that will appear again. But that's pretty much the general plot.
Thank you.
But anyway, let's go back to the first version of Dr. Dolittle, which came out in 1967. And if you know your film history, that's the year that the code got lifted and they could start showing things like violence, which they did in the end of Bonnie and Clyde, and sex, which they did in The Graduate, two movies that came out in 1967, two films that were nominated for Best Picture. The Best Picture winner was In the Heat of the Night, about a black officer in the south of this country. Like, wow, big issue stuff. You know what else was nominated for Best Picture?
Dr. Dolittle.
Dr. Dolittle.
I can't believe that. When I saw this movie, I'm so surprised. That's clearly Hollywood.
That is bribery at its fucking finest, guys. Okay, because I'm sorry, but like, without us telling you how we feel about the movie, even though if you don't realize we did not like it, like we didn't like it. Bonnie and Clyde, Graduate, In the Heat of the Night, iconic films for this country. How did Dr. Dolittle get nominated? How? You know it's bribery.
Special effects.
Yeah.
It had some decent special effects. For 67. And it also had maybe just one iconic song.
If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals.
If I could talk to the animals.
That is the only song that I... So it's funny, right? I actually used to watch this movie growing up. Mm-hmm. Watching it as a kid and then watching it now is two different experiences.
Yeah.
But I forgot it was a musical. This movie is a musical.
It is a musical. All right, so...
Although that's using it loosely.
I think it is. So in 1964, My Fair Lady came out. It won the Best Picture. Rex Harrison was in that. And 1965, The Sound of Music came out. So musicals were kind of like what studios were now putting all of their money into, big, lavish, 2.5-hour musicals. And so I think it was 20th Century that did this, right?
It was 20th Century Fox.
20th Century decided...
They distributed it. The production company was APJAC.
Arthur P. Jacobs. He put a lot of money and hope into this, thinking it would benefit from the success of The Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. 2 years, a little too late, though. By 1967, the world was a-changing from like the way it was 3 years prior. So they got Rex Harrison from My Fair Lady fame. They originally wanted the Sherman Brothers from Mary Poppins, but they didn't get them. They got different composers.
Briscosi.
Very interesting.
Lionel Newman.
Who went on to score Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Really?
Yes, that is also what they're known for.
This was a huge misstep then.
Yes. Like, well, there was a lot of production problems.
Oh, really?
By all accounts, Rex Harrison's a dick, first of all. He was like everyone antagonized him on set because him and his posse were mean and racist and belittling to people.
Racist?
Mm-hmm. Oh. They went way over budget costs.
Oh, lots of special effects.
Scheduling conflicts and just working with animals is not easy, and there were a lot of animals. They didn't have the visual effects that we have today, so they really had to make these animals work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, you know, animal cruelty happened, unfortunately. So it was just riddled with problems with
people
drama. So who was the
animal cruelty? Do we know who it was directed to? I have a guess.
Do you think it was the parrot?
Oh, I was thinking the chimpanzee.
Or the chimpanzee, yeah.
The chimpanzee was basically a slave.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you would think a film about a doctor who befriends animals and who can talk to animals would be enjoyable. You would think.
All right. I think we're being a little harsh on this because the movie itself is not terrible. I think the problem with it is the fact that it's trying to be a musical, but like Rex Harrison isn't really singing as much as he just.
Well, he was known for that. That's what he did in My Fair Lady, too.
So what, he speaks like, in a little bit of harmony?
Yeah.
Ugh, it's not what I want to listen to.
And it's not like what every single song is supposed to be about. At least give me someone else who can who's I enjoy as much as I would enjoy Rex Harrison. There wasn't a lot of name people in it.
No, because it was the only other person I could think of is his friend, not Tuppence. Tuppence is a young kid.
The older man.
Sam, I think was his name.
His name was Matthew Mugg. And he sang the first song, which was a good song. And the first song that begins the film is not bad.
Introducing the doctor, my friend the doctor, whatever it was.
But I just also found the filmmaking to be very uninspired, personally. Richard Fleischer is just not a musical filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he knew how to frame things and how long to keep his shots for and to block scenes and stuff. So even then I was just like, this is kind of boring.
Well, it felt like a set a lot of times.
It did feel like a set.
The set pieces feel exactly like set pieces.
Yes.
When I'm watching this movie, especially Dr. Dolittle's home.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think the other thing, I guess, about it was also, there was like, they do play around occasionally with time. like sometimes you're in the flashback and stuff.
Yeah. But
that confused the hell out of me.
That did.
I was watching this, rewatching it basically, and I was just like, wait, what is happening? So it turns out that Dr. Doolittle was a doctor for people before he was a doctor for animals. And then eventually, and this is important, Dr. Doolittle decides that he's going to learn how to speak to animals mm-hmm. in their language. So when Dr. Doolittle speaks to these animals, Rex Harrison is speaking like in animal tongues, basically. So he's yeah. like, ooh, 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 ooh. Basically, you know, pretend like he's a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
Or the only one who could understand him is the parrot.
Polynesia.
Polynesia, thank you.
Yeah.
Dr. Doolittle speaks to animals through learning their languages as he learned from Polynesia. So basically what we see in the movie is what happened in the books. He learns by speaking to them in their animal tongue.
Okay.
We didn't really give a plot background.
No.
Because this movie kind of feels like it has no plot.
Yeah. So what would you say the plot of the 1967 film is?
So after watching it, I get what is Dr. Doolittle is in search for the giant snail, a pink snail.
Yes.
The pink snail?
The giant pink snail.
I think is that what it was?
But he only starts becoming obsessed with that like in the second half of the film.
No, it's introduced early in.
Introduced, but then it's like, oh, hey, you know, then we go to the circus with this weird two-headed llama.
The two-headed llama. I actually like the two-headed llama.
Yeah, I mean, that was okay, but it served no purpose.
No, that whole sequence did not serve a purpose for story-wise.
So weird. It was like two different films in one, honestly. There was like the first half and the second half, and the first half is just a bunch of misadventures of Dr. Doolittle, which, you know, if you are enjoying yourself, you don't mind. If you're not enjoying yourself, it just becomes terrible.
Yeah, so basically the movie is about Dr. Doolittle in search for this pink snail, and I get so it's about funding the trip too.
Yeah,
right. That's part of his problem, that he doesn't have the funds to fund this travel, because mm-hmm. you have to go on a ship and you have to go around the world to get to, you know, these animals. And then his ship ends up crashing. It gets hit in a storm, so he ends up on an island full of like native people who read Shakespeare for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. That right? was weird.
It was weird. he solves their problem with the volcano. So I'm just giving you guys plot points because that's what we felt like. It was just like one plot point to another.
And then this
to
happens. Another to,
yes, basically.
And then this happens.
What movie did we just complain about that? Oh, The Golden Compass.
Yeah.
The Golden Compass had that problem where it just feels like we're just going through the motions. We're not really telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's not really much consequences other than this one part where it feels like Dr. Doolittle, who has some kind of like people who don't understand him and his gift, want to submit him to a mental asylum.
Mm-hmm. Cause he was in jail. Yeah. He got arrested.
That's right. He got arrested.
He gets arrested. He goes to trial. He asks the judge's dog, what did he have for dinner? And then the dog tells him the truth. So when he repeats it, the judge is offended. It's just like, how dare you accuse me of eating 8 pieces of pie? I only had 2, but the dog is just like, mm-mm. He had all those 8 pieces.
Yeah.
And wow, so he gets arrested. That. And then Tuppins and Matthew end up staging an elaborate escape. It wasn't that elaborate.
And that's why at the end, he's like, oh, it's my big return to England, which we never see. He just like flies in on a
butterfly. Like
a giant butterfly.
Like a Mothra.
It's just weird.
It is a weird movie. The movie. It was basically like Mothra. That's basically what it was. Yeah, this movie, it's an interesting movie, by which I mean it's just like, I can't believe that this was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, with all the things that it was up against, it's just kind of a interesting mess of a movie. It's very messy. It feels amateurish, actually.
I would agree. Because even though, even the music itself, like, there's only one good song in it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I would say, actually, because I do like the vegetarian song.
Oh,
I'm surprised that you're not behind this movie, considering like this is a very heavy pro-vegetarian.
Yeah, I know. Well, but I think his song at the mental asylum when he's talking about our disrespect and the way that we treat animals was my favorite, even though it wasn't a very melodic song. I can't tell you how it goes, but I liked the message behind it.
Right. It's just like, why do we say he acts like a dog.
Yeah.
When dogs are the most loyal animal, mm-hmm. basically, right?
Yeah, like why do we like say this, you know? Like
dirty like a pig when, you know, we're dirtier or something. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's basically just like, I don't know. This, I'm surprised that this must be what the PETA uses to brainwash people. I have to assume.
Really?
PETA is a terrorist organization, man.
PETA makes some unwise choices a lot of the time.
A lot of them.
But I would say that this is a very ineffective way to brainwash someone. I mean, the most famous song from this film is "If I Could Talk to the Animals."
If I could talk to the animals.
Which I don't even think people really know that much anymore. So this film,
you've probably seen it in commercials
or in like Simpsons references, yeah, and yeah, stuff. This film has not echoed in time. I'm surprised that the character of Dr. Doolittle was even something that they wanted to remake, because I consider this film to be really kind of cringeworthy. Mm. As a person who loves musicals and who defends them, especially from this era too, this is just like the type of film that makes it look bad. And that makes me like look bad.
Yeah. You know what the other problem with this movie is? Mm. We're just really complaining about this movie, but
yeah,
it's also so long.
It's so long. It's so almost long. 3 hours. It feels long.
It feels so much longer than it really is.
Yeah. Like when the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh my God, how much longer do I have?
And it's just interesting because as a kid, I do remember watching this movie and liking it. Not necessarily like it's not a go-to movie, mm-hmm, right? It's not, I don't have the, like I do remember watching it several times, but it's also usually because of this whole idea of a doctor who can talk to animals, right? There's something whimsical about that.
Yeah.
You see all the animals together in his house. The two-headed llama, which I actually, even when I was rewatching this, like, oh my God, I remember this scene. This scene is, it's not great.
Yeah.
But it's still like, I because of nostalgia, I'm still like, so I was still very much, my eyes were glued to that sequence.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't grow up with it at all. So I watched this and I was like, what the hell am I watching?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's a weird movie, and then the fact that it would get remade almost 30 years later is an interesting one.
Yeah,
because they
completely
made some
different
interesting
film
decisions for they this
did
movie.
Yes.
So let's flash forward to
1998. Yeah.
1998. Dr. Doolittle.
That Shakespeare Love won Best Picture.
Oh, I like Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a Best Picture winner, but it's like nice because it's like different, you know?
Shakespeare fell in love with Gwyneth Paltrow. How is that not Oscar winner?
Are you a big Gwyneth Paltrow fan?
No. I'm not.
She was very good in that movie.
She was very good in that movie.
She was.
Did she nominate for Best Actress?
She won for Best
Actress.
She
won for Best Actress. I don't know if that's merited. Was he nominated?
He might have been, but he did not win.
That's a shame. I think he was great.
He was good.
Actually, no, I take it back. She was good in that movie, too. Her Oscar was also another well-deserved Oscar.
She was good. Yeah. Yeah. This is also the year Saving Private Ryan came out.
Mm, that's another goodie.
Armageddon came out this year.
I like that movie. I don't care what anyone says.
Michael Bay at his best.
That is Michael. That is definitely the beginnings of mm-hmm Michael Bay explosion.
Yeah. Followed hit that up with Pearl Harbor.
Oh, that's Harbor. Okay.
So yeah, the song on the radio this year was "I Don't Want to Miss a Thing."
I remember that song.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're recording this on the day of the Super Bowl. Do you remember when Aerosmith performed the Super Bowl with NSYNC?
Oh
they
my
performed
God
parts of this one.
Are you serious?
I don't want to miss a thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Fucking Super Bowl. I wonder who they're going to have come out this year at like randomly.
It's who's going to join J-Lo and mm-hmm Pitbull.
Tony Bennett.
No.
Because they put random pairings together, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Bruno Mars.
When you guys listen to this, by all means, comment on our social media feed. Tell us who was a special guest appearance. I'm guessing it's going to be Pitbull. Pitbull and Shakira. J-Lo and Pitbull. Wyclef Jean also. You know she was going to do Hips Don't Lie.
Oh, yeah, she would have to. That's like her biggest thing. Yeah. Dirty South. Uh-huh. Can y'all really feel me? Feel us. West Coast, feel me. Feel us. West Coast, feel me. Say what? Dirty South. Here we go. So this film was directed. 1998's Dr. Doolittle was directed by a woman. Betty Thomas.
Yes. I didn't know that.
She directed actually one of my guilty pleasures, which was the 1995 film version of the Brady Bunch movie.
That's a guilty pleasure.
I love that movie.
That's a good movie. I don't think that's a guilty pleasure.
I enjoy the film.
I know. I think guilty, because I think guilty pleasure has a negative. That means that like it's viewed negatively.
Yeah. Some people don't think the Brady Bunch movie is a good movie.
Really?
Yeah. These it's not like regarded.
Wrong.
So anyway, her follow up to that was Private Parts with Howard Stern, which is a good film too. And then she did fucking Dr. Doolittle.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that he went with a female director, because that movie's also like kind of a little exploitative of women.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was different in the 90s. Women, you know, shit was different. Mm. But she had a chance to direct another movie. She went for it. And then she got Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle, sorry, Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy, which is interesting too, because this is no longer 80s Eddie Murphy. This is 90s Nutty Professor mm-hmm Eddie Murphy. So he's making more family-friendly things.
Is Is Nutty Professor family friendly?
Yes, I want to go see it in the theater.
I don't know. It's a PG-13. I don't know if it's a family friendly movie. This is definitely Dr. Dolittle is a family friendly movie.
Yes, this one more so.
Yes,
but that began it. I mean, I saw it in the theater. Okay. Nutty Professor and Dr. Dolittle 2 were like two of his like remakes of older films, because Nutty Professor is an older film with Jerry Lee Lewis, and Dr. Dolittle obviously Rick Harrison. And I can't think of anything else that Eddie Murphy did in the 90s that were as big as those two.
Meet the Clumps.
The sequel to Nutty Professor. The third, actually, I think. Because there was Nutty Professor 2 and then Meet the Clumps.
Oh.
Or maybe that was Nutty Professor 2, Meet the Clumps.
Meet the Clumps was the second one.
So, you know, you think that a movie that would have Eddie Murphy as the star, as the titular character of Dr. Dolittle, would have more Eddie Murphy humor and like would be regarded as one of his best, and that's just not it. He is very much outshined by all the voice actors that play the animals in this film.
Yes.
This film takes a very different approach from the 1967. He's like an old time doctor in England, you know, and he goes on a voyage. He's like lives in a private sanctuary and he communicates in their own language to them. This one sets it in contemporary of 1998.
San Francisco?
Yeah, San Francisco, I'm pretty sure.
I forget those. No, I'm pretty sure.
Some California coastal town.
I'm pretty sure it's Francisco.
And from a young age, he was able to talk to animals, mm-hmm. and then his parents made him repress it.
With an exorcism.
Yeah. Until one day he has like this accident with almost killing a dog uh-huh. in his car when he's a father of like children, all this stuff, and it comes back.
Yes.
And in this film, they don't really make a distinction between him like talking in the language to them. He just like talks to them and they speak English to him and their mouths move and everything.
Correct.
So it's really interesting too, because it's like no one else can hear this. What's going on? Like that gets a little muffled. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But like it does like, I guess. So I like this movie as a kid a lot. Yeah,
I like this movie as a kid too.
Only because of the talking animals. However, watching it as an adult, I'm just like, actually. What? Some of this doesn't make sense.
A lot of it doesn't make sense. Okay. Especially their references as animals, which is for comedic purposes too. But it's just like, I mean, yeah, it kind of throws caution outside the wind. It has a big voice cast. It has Norm Macdonald, Albert Brooks, Ellen DeGeneres, Chris Rock.
Chris Rock was the hamster.
Yeah. Gilbert Gottfried. He was the guinea pig.
No.
Chris Rock?
Chris Rock was a guinea pig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was Gilbert Gottfried?
Gilbert Gottfried was a compulsive dog. That was literally.
Okay. I remember. That's like when. Okay.
Yeah. Julie Kavner was a pigeon. John Leguizamo was a rat. Jonathan Lipnicki apparently was one of the tiger cubs.
Was he really? That's so funny.
Some of the names that, that appear. But yeah. So big, big voice cast.
Uh-huh.
And this movie, it kind of feels very 90s in terms of its humor. Like I was surprised at how many like butt jokes there were.
They are a surprise. It's like very toilet humor.
It's so toilet humor.
It's just like, I mean, the scene where, like, for example, the lady who goes to see Dr. Dolittle for some reason. Oh, because she's allergic to shellfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
He keeps telling her, don't eat shellfish. And then we cut to a random scene of her eating shellfish in a toilet.
Yeah.
As she's sitting on top of the hamster.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And, like, you know, she apparently doesn't feel the hamster, like, underneath her.
Because her butt is so big.
I suppose. But eventually she does, and then she's just like, oh my goodness. It's so funny, right? Because I remember enjoying that scene a lot
mm-hmm.
as a kid. And then as an adult, I'm just like, this makes no, why is she eating like lobster in a toilet?
Yeah.
You're a grown ass woman. Like, I know you're allergic, but like, own it, lady. You know?
Yeah, and just so many like scenes of people like bending over and animals getting a whiff of it, or even with the dog like having the probe up its butt. You know, it's just like this is the source of a lot of humor.
I mean, the movie starts off with a butt joke, basically.
Right? Yeah, like, and it does too.
Why do dogs sniff each other's butts? And he's like, mm-hmm. That's how we say hello.
And the little
boy
did it.
So what does he do? He sniffs his principal's butt.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, I would
do an exorcism.
Probably react the same way the parent did, but be a little bit nicer about it. But I'm like, something's wrong with my fucking kid.
Well, yeah, I mean. I don't know if the exorcism is warranted.
Yeah.
That's where I would say it's just like, is this the appropriate reaction to a child sniffing another
dog? Gift.
Because I feel like a lot of children used to sniff like chair seats after someone sits on them.
Yeah. So I mean, well, like, kids, you know, are still learning.
Yeah.
So social etiquette.
It's just like, I feel like it's.
I feel bad though, because most of the movie too, I'm like, why is he going through all these lengths to hide his gift? Like that becomes kind of like the main antagonism. thing of the film, is that it's this big secret that he has to keep to himself. He can't let anybody know that he has this gift to talk to animals, even though his wife is super supportive and his kids would think it's so cool. They're not his father, who clearly hated it. But of course, that was because of the trauma that his father put him through the exorcism.
Well, I think he does things wrong where, like, he makes it almost seem like he's cheating on his hot wife.
Yeah, so hot.
So gorgeous.
So, yeah, very pretty.
It's just like, oh, yeah, let's do everything possible to make it seem like you're seeing someone else.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy, please, come on.
Yeah.
Dr. Doolittle.
I loved the little girl, though. Not Raven, the other one.
Oh, Kyla Pratt.
Yeah,
she was great. Who will eventually have her own Dr. Doolittle movie.
Yes.
Dr. Doolittle 3.
Mm-hmm.
Kyla's Revenge. I don't know.
But. Yeah, this movie was a huge hit when it came out. I remember seeing it and thinking it was super funny. And it was received very warmly in 1998.
Wow. What was... I mean, you mentioned some movie. I guess that must have been a dry season for comedy then.
1998, not a very memorable movie year.
You just mentioned Shakespeare in Love and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, but still.
Armageddon.
That's one of the movies that I named from that year, and you think that's a memorable year? Well, you know what else came out that year? Godzilla came out that year.
I actually like Godzilla.
That Godzilla?
I'm not even going to front. Like, I'm like this highbrow individual. Godzilla is a enjoyable movie.
I think when you think of 90s comedies, for sure, there's not a lot that... I think the biggest name comedy that came out in 1998 was There's Something About Mary.
That's actually also one of my favorite movies.
You like that movie?
I actually love that movie. My guidance counselor was taken aback when I said, it's just like, why do you want to be a filmmaker? I'm just like, you know what? I want to make movies like There's Something About Mary.
Oh, so you wanted to make comedies.
I was interested in making comedies.
I wanted to make comedies too. Yeah.
If you actually look at a lot of my short films, like, they tend to be a lot of potty humor.
Yes, they do. Yeah, there was one that literally was robbed around a toilet.
There you go. See?
Well, you were in a frat house, so I can't blame you for that.
There you go. That's awesome.
Mulan also came out that year, which we'll be covering soon.
Which we will be covering very soon. Yes. I'm so excited.
This is all top 10 of 1998. But yeah, so overall, Dr. Doolittle, I feel like the 1998 film, I was kind of looking forward to seeing like Eddie Murphy do like Eddie Murphy things. Didn't really do it.
Now?
Yeah.
Now.
When I saw it. Now.
Okay.
Like in terms of like 2 weeks ago. In
1998, I was a kid. I didn't know who Eddie Murphy was. Like, I don't know his like.
Yeah, it could have been anybody.
Right? So it could have been anybody.
It wasn't. It was Eddie Murphy and they didn't really use him. Mm-hmm. The voice acting is like, it's a little awkward now for me. But overall, it was more enjoyable than 1967. And I did have that nostalgic thing that you had when you watched the 1967 one again, because I had watch this apparently a lot. I remembered quite a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a short movie.
It is a short movie.
It is a really short movie. A lot of, sometimes like some of the jokes, like are really just, like it's just there for like jokes, like,
yeah,
gag humor basically.
And even like the obstacles.
Right. Yeah. And they're not there necessarily for plot, but actually we haven't even talked about the plot. So what is the plot of Dr. Doolittle?
Well, in this film, he's a actual doctor. Mm-hmm. So the whole repression of talking to animals comes back after a thing, and then he has to kind of like deal with it,
uh-huh,
while trying to maintain order in his life. Mm-hmm. And then I guess just like trying to balance family life and work life and now animal life. Mm-hmm. That's really it though. Like there's other stuff.
But I mean, I remember the main plot point, because this is like the end, right? Where everyone, mm-hmm, discovers that he has this power to talk to animals is when he's doing surgery on the tiger.
Yeah.
Because the tiger has, it's not a tumor, it's almost like a blood clot. And stuff. And here's like the interesting thing, I think, now watching this movie, it's just like, it makes no sense that Dr. Doolittle would be able to do all these like doctor things on animals, because like their anatomy is so different from humans.
Yes.
I think he even literally says it in the movie, where it's just like, it's all right. Animals and humans aren't that different. And it's just like, no, they're whole different schools of, they're whole different schools of thought.
I mean, in biology class, it was completely different. Doing a squid from a frog.
Mm, yeah, precisely. Like,
so, no. Also, I guess when you get older, you get a little bit, you care a little bit more about like some of the things that get lost in the weeds. And this movie didn't really have like, it was fantasy. So it didn't really care about like believability.
Right.
But it was a little weird when like there's this one scene where he's in the waiting room and this woman's like, lie down, Chauncey. Lie down. And then like, she's like, he's deaf. And then the dog literally turns to Dr. Doolittle and speaks. And it's weird because it's like, is your dog barking? Like, it just, the relationship between John and the animals feels a little like, okay, so you have to keep this a secret, but no red flags are happening to anyone in your life?
Right, right, right.
Like, how are you interacting with these animals, you know?
I mean, my favorite one was like when and this makes no sense in the movie, because by the logic that is about to portray, so there's a scene where like Dr. Doolittle is talking with an orangutan, right, and like doing the test on the orangutan to see if it can communicate back, and the orangutan speaks quiet. And then when Dr. Doolittle is leaving, right, the doctors are considered, he's crazy. The orangutan starts speaking in Spanish, right?
Yeah.
And it makes no sense. It's just like, why can some animals speak different languages? Because technically speaking, a lot of these animals, they could be from all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. Like the tiger is either from Africa or India.
Yeah.
So why is the tiger not speaking in those languages?
Yeah, you good point. Good point.
So,
and why are they making references to songs and
that's the
and movies and pop culture?
Because that implies then that the animals are always able to understand people. But
yeah, but then but, that scene with the dog and the butt thing, he's like doesn't understand what the doctor's saying or doing. He's relying on Dr. Doolittle to kind of translate to him,
right?
So then it gets a little confusing.
Yes, that's a perfect example. Yeah, movie's flawed with logic. Logic is thrown out the window. This movie. It's so funny. You don't pick it up as a kid.
You don't. Because it doesn't matter. Really don't.
Eddie, did you see this movie?
No.
You never saw Dr. Doolittle?
Dr. Doolittle was a character I was never attracted to.
What? What?
I think there's something about the approach that they take.
I mean, just talking to animals?
Yeah, I never cared for that.
Wow. I don't know what your childhood was. And yet you're the one who's always talking to Bobby. Our dog.
No, I never cared for Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, my God.
The stories.
This is like a red flag, I feel like, for our upcoming wedding.
For when you want to have children, a.k.a. puppies. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I cared for Dr. Doolittle, but, you know, as a kid, I definitely wanted to see this movie. There's something weird about Dr. Doolittle. Like, I feel like Dr. Doolittle could resonate a little bit more with our society. I feel like sometimes he pops up, like, in these movies, and then he goes away.
And then he goes, well, he was like, around for a while because there's a sequel soon after Dr. Doolittle 2.
Yes.
And that's where Dr. Doolittle is trying to rehabilitate a bear into the wild.
Yes, this version of Dr. Doolittle is by far the most successful, and which is interesting because this one is the most bland Dr. Doolittle.
In retrospect, it is the most bland.
Yeah,
I think, actually, Dr. Doolittle 2, do you remember that one well or no?
No.
Oh, so I actually remember Dr. Doolittle 2 a little better because it had a stronger plot. And the plot is that Dr. Doolittle is now, like, he is an animal doctor, and he is trying to save a swath of land from demolition, and in order to do so, he has to, like, rehabilitate this bear into the wild. So it has actual consequences and stuff, and then the evil corporation is trying to prove that he's crazy.
That is definitely more
interesting. It's a stronger plot.
Yeah, it is.
I think that one actually was less well-received. I get probably because I think, if I remember correctly, it didn't really rely on those, like, cheesy butt humor jokes.
Oh, which is what people came for.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, the budget for this film, so comparatively speaking, in 1967, right, they went over by a lot. Their budget, they initially had $6 million. They did $17 million budget. It made $9
million. It made $9 million?
That's how poorly received it was.
It was a flop, and it was nominated for the Oscar?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah.
Where's Eddie Murphy's Oscar for being Dr. Doolittle?
Seriously, where's the bribery there? The budget for Eddie Murphy's Dr. Doolittle was $70 million, and they raked in almost $300
million. Wow.
Big success.
You go, Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also going to say a lot of the success for this movie had to be its soundtrack, because it gave us probably one of the 90s greatest songs.
Which was?
Are You That Somebody by Aaliyah.
Mm.
That is easily one of the most memorable songs of the 90s.
Yeah.
End of the 90s also. But, like, it is so good.
But other than that, it was okay. I mean, revisiting it wasn't like, oh, wow, it was kind of disappointing.
Revisiting it was more disappointing than I thought it was.
I don't know if I was more disappointed with, like, how old I've become or, like, at how insulted I should be as to what they're feeding children.
You know, Hollywood has never done it. Hollywood has always been a disservice at, like, what they give children.
Yeah, true.
And I think if anything proves that, it is the 2020 Dr. Doolittle movie. So let's flash forward there. How 22 years later.
Mm-hmm.
22 years later. Damn, we're old.
They figured, you know, we are rebooting and doing everything, so let's bring back Dr. Doolittle.
Mind you, this is Robert Downey Jr.'s first role since leaving Iron Man, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he chooses.
directed by Stephen Gaghan, who I don't think he's done, or Gaghan. I'm sorry if I butchered his name. Stephen Gaghan. He's written a bunch of scripts before. Traffic. Rules of Engagement. Traffic's a very good
Traffic
film.
Is a good movie. Rules of Engagement is okay.
Yeah.
It's a good script, okay. Actually. I'll say that. Actually, it's a good
it's
script.
It's a good script.
As a movie, it was kind of a little all over the place, mm-hmm. but it was a good script.
And then he wrote and directed Syriana. And that was pretty good with George Clooney. I mean, it's kind of forgettable. So but it was like pretty solid. Also, you know, like having a career as like a political drama guy. Mm-hmm. So kind of 180 on over to Sherlock Holmes. Maybe that's the first thing that went wrong.
Just coming in with the punches.
Yeah, Susan Downey was one of the producers. There was three different people who wrote the screenplay. Stephen Gaghan did not do it by himself.
Okay.
And the person who came up with the story was not involved with the screenplay either. So a bunch of people were involved writing, which is also never a good sign.
It is never a good sign, yeah, when you have
multiple writers.
Multiple, not necessarily that you have multiple writers, but like usually, and the people who originally came up with the story are not involved.
Yeah.
It's usually like, that means it was like in development hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this did take a while to come about. Mm-hmm. The film has, you know, Danny Elfman doing its music. It's got Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doolittle. It's
Danny Elfman did the music?
Yeah, he
did. Oh, I didn't even notice that. This music was actually not memorable.
No, not at all.
This was, wow.
Yeah.
Did not know this. Okay.
Tons of voice actors.
Uh-huh.
Selena Gomez, Selena Ralph Fiennes, Gomez. Octavia Spencer, Tom Holland, Emma Thompson, Michael Sheen was actually in it. Rami Malek.
Actually, it's interesting that Tom Holland wasn't more prominent because he did play Spider-Man in the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
It's just like, this seems like a surefire way to get seats in. Because
it would
that's
seem
one of the
like
best
it.
Things of Marvel, right? Like, like the relationship between Tony Stark and Spider-Man.
Oh, really? I haven't seen them. I stopped watching superhero movies.
Okay.
And they had $175 million public budget, so they probably went over more. So far, the budget, the box office draw has only been $125 million. I don't think they're
internationally.
More.
And that's
that
international.
Is internationally,
that's
too.
Not even, yeah, that's not even...
So it's a flop.
Basically.
Did you see this movie? Audience member, I wonder.
Oh, I thought
when
you were
I went,
me.
I know you saw it. When I went into the theater, it was practically empty. It was me, two like family like in the first row, and then a bunch of like loud ass teenagers in the last row that I had to go tell them be quiet because I guess they were like, let's get a quiet place to hang out. Let's go see Dr. Doolittle.
Man, maybe they got high and were watching Dr. Doolittle for the animals.
Maybe.
Conversations.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe they actually had faith.
I know Eddie, we watched this. Was our theater empty? I don't remember.
It was empty-ish. I mean, I feel like there wasn't a lot of people, but there were some people.
The movie starts out pretty strong. Beautiful animation sequence that sets up like his history with him and like his long-lost love. Well, yeah, she died.
She died.
And it just also does a really good job of setting up the character. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really pretty.
So interesting you should say that. I actually think if they had done the whole movie in that style of animation,
it would have been good.
It would have been, yeah, I actually would have been here for it because it was beautifully animated, like the opening sequence, yeah.
It was very beautiful. And I'm surprised that nobody, maybe there hasn't been a TV show or something. I'm surprised that nobody's gone the animated route for Dr. Doolittle. It would seem so much easier to tell this story and animated and like, you know, give it the intention and the everything it would need. But they don't. So it ends, and then we meet Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doolittle, and it's awkward.
Technically speaking, we meet Tuppence first.
We do meet Tuppence first.
Okay. He's hunting for birds or something with his uncle. He's an orphan. He accidentally shoots a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I almost cried because I just can't take that kind
of
stuff.
Well, he tries to save the squirrel, right? So then Polynesia, who returns after not being in the Eddie Murphy Dr. Doolittle, she... tells Tuppence, is just like, go find Dr. Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this kid abandons his uncle to go find Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
And adventure ensues, basically. That is a setup.
Yes.
Right? He finds Dr. Doolittle. We find out that Dr. Doolittle is a recluse at this point because
he lost his love.
He lost his love, and as a result, he believes that humans aren't worth saving, basically. That's more or less like what he believes. Like, humans are awful.
Anti-human. You know, totally depressed, doesn't shower, doesn't, you know, tend to himself, doesn't shave. I guess I kind of got an implication that he took to the bottle, but it's a children's movie, so they weren't going to explore that.
Mm.
So he's got like...
Interesting. I didn't pick that up, but I guess you're right. I guess that is implied.
Yeah, he kind of like woke up, look, hungover and all this stuff, mm-hmm. and just ambitionless.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, at the same time, the queen's daughter comes to fetch him.
Technically a princess, I suppose.
A princess, yeah. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
The princess comes to, because also in this movie, he is protected by the queen. Like, she gave him this whole fucking, like, castle and stuff. Yeah, a sanctuary for him to live in and to tend to animals. So she comes and says, Queen's sick, go tend to her. And then Tommy's there and all this stuff. And they do a good job at setting up as how to how he communicates. He does communicate in their language.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll, like, do, like, a thing where it's like, and now let's do it in English so you guys can understand how he's right, talking right. to them.
So, because when we see the other character's point of view, they're hearing, like, animal speak.
Yes.
And when it's, like, I guess, like, the audience view, like, we're hearing the actual conversations. Which yes. I thought was smart in terms of how to... Because they took elements basically from the original one and yes. Eddie Murphy's.
Yeah, this one felt closer to the Rex Harrison version and all this stuff. And in this one, I guess he's Scottish because I was expecting him to sound like Sherlock Holmes, like with that English accent, but he gave him a Scottish accent.
He was Scottish? He was Irish.
He was...
I don't know what accent he was doing and yeah, I'm not here for accent. It because it was just like not a good... It sometimes made it, understanding him hard.
It did. Yeah, it was a little weird.
It did. And it was it like... I was watching. I was like, am I not just not hearing it? Because he yeah. would be like, is he mumbling? And it's just like mumbling his lines. Mm-hmm. And after a while, that just became something of just, I lost interest fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like his accent too much either. To me, it sounded Scottish, but it felt put on. And then I don't particularly enjoy sometimes when Robert Downey Jr. makes like these weird, like, what's that word? Like they're kind of not flamboyant, but they're eccentric, yeah. He tends to make them a little bit more eccentric. Like, I don't care for his brand of eccentric.
Does he try to do a lot of eccentric characters much?
I feel like he made Sherlock Holmes that way, too.
Oh, I forgot that he's in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. So, something we haven't covered, and that's too much to tackle. That's like a two-parter.
Maybe
there.
One day.
Maybe one day. But, yeah, so, and then he just, like, you know, he doesn't, like, stand straight, and he mumbles his words and all this stuff, and I don't know. I don't like it. I don't find it charming. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't think that that's just, like, I didn't like it. He's trying know. To pull... That's his acting technique or choice or whatever. Don't care for it.
Did it feel like a bad impression of a Johnny Depp character?
It kind of did.
Yeah, that's
kinda
what I got.
It kind of felt like Captain Jack Sparrow-ish. It kind of felt like he really didn't want to do what he's known for or has done before, so he went, like kind of in his own comfortable way of something else. And it's his prerogative.
He was very much involved in the production of this movie too.
Yeah,
he actively chose this to be his first role after, you know, being Iron Man for 10 plus years.
Yeah.
So
want to make something for the kids.
Iron Man is for kids.
One more so for kids.
For the fans.
I'm sorry, that there's a lot of grown ass people out there wearing Iron Man shirts. So
yeah,
I would argue it's more for adults.
The first
days.
Iron Man movie, I think, was more so for kids.
Yeah, when it first came out, not yeah. anymore. That was 12 years ago.
Yeah, damn, 12 years ago.
Yeah. So people are now getting married.
Time flies. Yeah. Making comic book movies. But no, so this was like actively like this was his. He really wanted to make this movie.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate too because the movie is really messy. It's really choppy. I feel like it probably was 2 hours, and they're like, "We got to cut this down to 95 minutes." And there just seems to be like a bunch of plots that are missing.
Oh, that's so interesting. So you thought the movie? How long was the movie?
It was about an hour and a half.
Oh, it felt longer.
It did. It didn't feel short.
It did not feel short.
There was a couple moments where he's like, they're on the boat. There's a big storm coming, and then all of a sudden they're at the island.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
and it's like, okay.
They're not on that island. They're actually on Anthony Banderas' island.
Antonio Banderas' island. Yeah, they're on Antonio Banderas' island. But not only that, they're in full costume, and they're halfway to the castle.
Hey, let's go back to some plot. So basically the plot is the queen is dying. She's being poisoned, but Dr. Doolittle has figured this out. We know that she's sick, but Dr. Doolittle figures out immediately that she's being poisoned.
Yeah.
And the only cure is like this magical flower from a tree that only his wife knew the whereabouts of.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to go on this adventure in order for his plot of land, his sanctuary, to be safe.
Yeah,
because if
the
queen dies, then they'll take away the land. So it gives like the motivation is actually sound. Of mm-hmm. why he's going on this adventure, yeah. which is now something that we got from the Rex Harrison. That's
Rex like Harrison.
Politics.
Is that really?
I'm pretty sure. Rex Harrison's movie, right? Where uh-huh. there was like no rhyme or reason as to why he's going on this adventure other than just like human discovery. Here we have like an actual reason for why he's going on this adventure, because there are stakes. The mm-hmm. animals are in jeopardy, and a lot of these animals, since they've been living under the care of Dr. Doolittle for so long, they are now in jeopardy because they could be hunted down because it's hunting season too.
Yes. Yes.
That's the other thing.
And so, that's, yeah, with the one character being introduced in hunting, you know, you feel like there's stakes for the animals to lose.
But, and then it quickly devolves because the rest of the movie becomes just set pieces.
Yes.
Basically.
And they don't even properly, like, open a chapter or close a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, there's a moment where you think they're going to run into a storm and there's going to be this whole scene of them in the ocean, and it jumps to them on an island that the wife was from, and them like halfway through getting to where they need to be.
Yeah,
and
then that was like a weird jump.
That was a weird jump. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, we're just jumping right to it. Like, just do narration to cover all of this. I really feel like they brought in Emma Thompson last and like, okay, just tie up a narration to get rid of all these scenes we cut out. And then also there was almost two long scenes. Like the sequence with the tiger was too long.
Right.
So I'm like, you tie all that up in a knot and like don't even make it clear to me how you got here. And now you're going to spend 10 minutes with this weird tiger who has mommy issues. In 1967, it didn't really like have an excuse to be like, oh, now we're going from this to this to this. I guess this movie had a reason, but this is even more so like, and now we're just jumping from one scene to the next, and now this happens, and now this happens, yeah. And whatever.
The movie very much felt like that. And on top of that, like you got Antonio Banderas, who is like, I actually enjoyed him in this performance, a little bit that we got of him.
Mm-hmm. He's a great actor.
Right. And but like he actually played this role with conviction.
Yeah.
Which is not something Antonio Banderas doesn't need to do. Like he is, let's be real, he is above this movie.
Yeah.
He is. And yet he still played the role with like actual conviction. And I feel like they just misused him.
Yeah.
Mostly because the writing was kind of so mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And then Michael Sheen's character comes in.
Oh, Michael Sheen was the worst character.
Yeah.
This is just a badly written villain.
Yeah. Well, the movie tells you immediately from the moment you see him that he's the villain. And it makes it like he's incredibly jealous of Dr. Doolittle, and that's his thing too. But like the moment then Michael Sheen comes in, and then it becomes like a completely different film, and then all of a sudden the gears change. And then we go into the scene with dragons.
That's the end.
The
spoiler
ending.
Spoiler alert, guys.
Which, sorry, there's dragons in the movie.
There are dragons in the movie.
That was just so anticlimactic. Especially when everything ended in a fucking butt joke. In a fart joke.
It was.
I turned to my girl and her face was just like insulted.
Kids enjoy fart jokes though.
Do they really?
If you watch Disney Plus or something. No, not Disney Plus. Disney Toon Disney. Is that still a thing?
Tiny Toons?
No, Tiny Toons. That's a TV show from the 90s. No, Toon Disney, I think. I think that's still a show. Or Boomer? I don't know. Whatever. I'm clearly aging myself. But, you know, a Disney Channel has, like, the spinoff that's, like, mostly for cartoons, not, like, for, like, the live action stuff.
Okay.
And if you watch a lot of those shows, there's a lot of butt humor, like, poop humor. Same thing with Cartoon Network. I don't know about Nickelodeon.
I guess there's also, like, build up your fucking fart jokes and your toilet humor. Don't just, like, put it there.
I won't lie. I thought it was funny. Come on. So it's kind of funny, right? Because you have this dragon who's been protecting this tree for all these years. And why is she so cranky? Oh, she's constipated because she's been eating so many people in armor. I thought that was funny. I agree with you. Like making that like the actual last like big like reveal was kind of weak.
Yeah.
If that had just been a joke in there and then like there was like a grander reveal of something, I would have been okay with it. But like as far as a joke it comes, it's just like a dragon constipated by all the metal that she's eaten while protecting her area. That's funny. I think it's funny.
Okay.
So I have the sense of humor of a child, I guess. I'm precious that way.
I mean, there are some things that I still find like ridiculously funny that I just are some people would deem immature, so I understand.
Really?
But yeah.
I can't imagine that being like what?
Me?
Yeah.
I like corny humor.
Mm.
Like I like bad jokes, or like other people like to say, dad jokes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like dad jokes too.
Yeah.
That was basically a dad joke.
And puns. Well, no, toilet humor is not my kind of like inappropriate humor. Mm-hmm. Mine's kind of like more like stupid. Like, wait, there's a fly in my soup. Oh, is it standing in for the apostrophe? Like, I like that kind of humor.
The hell is that? I don't even get that joke.
It's this old time joke.
Okay.
So I says to the waiter, there's a fly in my alphabet soup. He's like, well, what is he doing? Standing in for the apostrophe?
Oh.
Okay. That's the joke. So anyway.
The face of confusion on my face.
I also did not like the voice acting in this film. This did the same thing where it tried to make like the animals have like today's speak, uh-huh. which seemed really out of place in the world that they lived in. Uh-huh. But then also seemed like too extra, like the one gorilla who suffered from crippling panic attacks.
You didn't like the gorilla?
I did not like the gorilla.
I actually love the gorilla because he actually is the only one who had like an arc in terms of like he was like, you know, living in fear his whole life. And then like he fights a tiger and gets his moment of bravery.
I thought that was the polar bear.
No, the polar bear wasn't scared. The polar bear is just always cold.
But I thought it was the polar bear that fought the tiger.
No, it was a gorilla.
Huh.
Ape? Yeah. It was a gorilla or ape?
It wasn't very... I don't know. I didn't really get that.
Real Eddie? No? Okay. You guys are just haters. Like, I watched this movie with an open mind. I didn't like this movie by any means, but I was very open-minded to it.
I mean, I applauded the things that I did like about it. And I thought that overall, the relationship that he had with the memory of his loved one was sweet.
Lisa?
Mm-hmm. Lisa. I think that was her name, yeah.
I kept thinking Eliza, but it's not. It's not Eliza Doolittle. That's somebody else.
Yes, that is somebody else. Wuthering My Fair Heights? Lady was from
My Fair Lady. Okay.
Wes Harrison.
Oh, no way. Really? Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, they should have just done that.
They should have.
That would have been great. Like, right. It's just like a
little... you can talk to animals, can't you?
A little wink to like Rex. I was going to say
Tillerson. Just Eliza again. Doolittle Harrison, come in and talk to Dr. Doolittle. That'd be so great. The Ryan and Spine.
What do you think of his relationship with Tuppence in this movie? Because he was the other important character.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't understand why the animals wanted him so desperately to become the next Dr. Doolittle. Maybe it's because it's literally the only other human being that cares about animals that they could find. That relationship, like, you know, mentor, mentee, wasn't there for me. Mm-hmm. And I also just kind of felt like he fit a role and then he went with it. Like there wasn't any real substance to Tommy.
Okay.
So there was nothing there for me to really grab at.
I don't think I disagree with you, but I don't necessarily agree with you either. I guess I was honestly in the middle of that relationship. I think Johnny Depp, Robert Downey Jr. Does have, and this could be just influenced from me watching him being Iron Man and his interaction with like Spider-Man, but like I think he does do a good job of kind of playing that kind of subordinate father role, and I got a little bit of that here. I wish there was actually more of it, to be honest.
Okay.
But you know, it was you know, I think the kid was, I thought the kid was good, and I think the problem really was like trying to like interact with this eccentric Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, he was very eccentric.
You know who was misused? I think it was actually the princess.
Yeah.
I wish they had actually brought more of her into the movie.
Or if she went on the adventure too.
Right, yeah, because they just like kind of set her to the side and stuff, and it just got a little whiff of sexism, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I barely had any thoughts about her, and that's a shame. Like, why was she even there?
Mm-hmm.
The film actually underwent 3 weeks of reshoots.
Really?
Because they had initial test screenings that were really bad.
Oh, I think I read about that. Yes.
Yeah.
So technically also, so did the original one.
Oh, yeah. Well, the original one just the had original mess one, all over like, it.
It was 2.5 hours, like 2:40.
Yeah.
And that was apparently a shorter cut from the original cut.
Insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dr. Doolittle, where that just doesn't really seem like any of these really have anything to say whenever they come out about their time.
Uh-huh.
And just different, you know, interpretations and whatnot. Did you think that this was needed? Whether or not they missed it or not, do you think it was needed? You don't think so?
I leave Eddie Murphy's Dr. Doolittle to be the Doolittle that people remember. No one's going to remember it like in 25 years, I would say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we'll... us, the audience that saw it when we were kids, will have grown old.
Yeah.
But rewatching it, I was just like, oh, this movie actually is just okay.
Yeah. So the only time I ever liked or cared for the character of Dr. Doolittle was actually in the 1967 one when he sings that song about animals and how we should respect them. And Dr. Doolittle should be used as a mascot for animals and how we kind of need to learn how to understand them better.
Well, animals are dying, so I don't think
animals are passing from our lives.
25 years, there'll be many animals that need protecting from Dr. Doolittle. So I don't
see,
think.
And that's why Dr. Doolittle hasn't been utilized properly, because you know, like you believing in that, and actually me believing in that, like how we disrespect them so much that we're not going to have them anymore in our lives. Not even to eat, guys. You can't have your hamburgers anymore. Like respect them.
No, there'll still be farms, I think, for
these animals. It's just, I feel like the character of Dr. Doolittle is just consistently, in at least the films, I can't speak for the books, used wrong. And I think not really used for anything other than, like, what would it be like to talk to animals?
Right. Actually, that's an interesting point. So I agree with you on that one. I think you're right. Yeah. Like, I think it's just, like, they're not, because they don't say anything, these movies. They're just...
They don't. There. They say nothing. They don't draw attention to our relationship with animals. Like, I would have loved it. I mean, you know, a good... Walt Disney said a good film should make you cry for every time it makes you laugh. And I, as a child, actually would have loved to have seen a film that, like, showed me the reality of what it is like to be an animal in this world. And, like, really had a good cry about it as much as I would have had a good laugh. Like, at least be real and, like, honest about it. And I think that's kind of why this... character, why maybe, I don't know, I'm speaking for you when I say this, but this is why people like Eddie don't particularly like it, because he stands for nothing.
That's so interesting. What if they had done, like, what if it was Robert De Niro in, like, a gritty...
Robert De Niro?
Shit. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, you animals, you're good.
A Robert De Niro, Dr. Doolittle. Yeah, like, that could be gritty and, like, what's it called? Like, of him, like, what if it's... I don't know. I'm trying to think of how you can make it gritty and
kind of like a vengeance
and talk piece. About the animal plight that they are experiencing right now.
I don't know.
This would be like gross, but like, what if he was a doctor who was working at like one of those like farms where they mass kill all these like animals and stuff,
and then like undercover and stuff.
I don't know if he's undercover. Maybe he's on a rescue mission. I don't know. There is a way that you can make a Dr. Doolittle better.
Maybe. I don't know what it is. Maybe while a pig is on a line to be slaughtered, all of a sudden, like, he hears it, you know, crying to his mom.
And oh, my God. Like, yes. Something like that. Yeah. It's perfect.
And then he's like, no, wait, stop. And then it's like, what are you talking about? We need to ship this out. That would be
too pro-vegetarian and stuff. And America's not ready.
America's not ready. America's not ready for a lot of things. Just hit them, though. Just hit them with it. They'll get ready in 20 years.
See where they're at now.
Yeah.
Shall we do a quick lightning round?
Lightning round.
Lightning round.
Which version of Dr. Doolittle do you think that is the most tolerable and the most, you know, just enjoyable?
Eddie Murphy's? I think Eddie Murphy's.
The Dr. bland Doolittle. One?
Bland, but...
Second fiddle to his animals?
You know what? Had they developed a little... So, had they kind of gone into the whole fact of, like, kind of the shame that he feels... being, you know, talking to, right? Like, if they kind of explored that a little more, yeah, it could have been
just
better.
Just gave him more substance.
Right? But in terms of that, like, they kind of, you know, he's a man who's struggling with the fact that he's like, I have these weird powers. I'm a freak.
Yeah. They should have explored a lot more with mm-hmm. him. I think in terms of the way he carried himself and at least treated animals, you know, the original had a lot of potential, but Rex Harrison's just such a dipshit that I guess I'll have to also go with Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. So Eddie Murphy, clean sweep. Congratulations, Eddie Murphy.
Congrats. Has this happened before? Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, Dr. Doolittle. Did you see it? Did you like it? Do you like any of the films?
Probably did not.
If you haven't seen them, do you want to?
Yeah, and what do you think of the Eddie Murphy, Dr. Doolittles?
Yes.
Is your favorite thing about it? Aliyah's Are You That Somebody?
I Am That Somebody.
Tell me the baby somebody. Crying in the background. Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Yes. All right. Well, you can let us know. Where can they let us know,
Rolando? You can let us know on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. You can also let us know on Facebook by searching for Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. And feel free to email us.
Mm-hmm.
We will read them occasionally. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Yes. And if you enjoy our podcast, please let us know by leaving us a review wherever you can, typically on Apple Podcasts.
But yeah, like I said, if you... comments and stuff and you catch our attention, we will read it online. And this one actually caught my attention. It is from our follower on Instagram, ccrowls89. Sorry if I wrote that wrong, but they were responding to me being okay with like the murder of like children on the Golden Compass episode.
Yes.
So let's see what he writes. Love the casual. So this scene includes a lot of animal violence and child abuse, end quotation, Rolando. So it's a pretty good scene. Which is true. But anyway, he wanted to know, we need confirmation if The Hunger Games are his favorite YA books. It could explain a lot.
Mm.
So no, The Hunger Games is not my favorite YA novel, but it is very close. Do you guys want to take a guess?
As to what is your first favorite? Uh-huh.
What is my actual favorite YA novel?
Oh my God. Rolanda's favorite young adult novel. Is it the Gossip Girls books?
No.
Were those books?
That is a good guess. I would read those books if I had read them. No.
What is it?
It is Lord of the Flies, which is very much along the lines of The Hunger Games, right? Like, it's these kids stranded on an island who end up going crazy and killing themselves. It mm-hmm. is one of my favorite novels.
It's one of the most frustrating reads ever.
Oh, it's such a good one. Yeah. I remember, too, like, in high school, like, our teacher had made us write an essay on, like, do you think this book would work if the genders were reversed? Mm. And I was a hearty no, because, like, men struggling to create a hierarchy is, like, they struggle to create their hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. Women is almost more innate. Like, they fall into, like, a social hierarchy even faster. And I feel like it'd be even deadlier, to be totally honest.
It would definitely be.
So, yeah. But no, so very close with the Hunger Games guest. I guess that does, in fact, prove why I'm okay with children getting murdered.
Movies. Oh my god.
I just wish you wouldn't say that.
Just in movies, guys. Just in movies.
Not in.
Or TV.
Yeah, well, art imitates life. But on that note, thank you guys so much. And until next time,
stay an original.